Hey there. Welcome to our live SaaS Academy MA sessions. I'm your host, Anna Dana, Head of Growth at SaaS Group, serial acquirer buying wonderful SaaS businesses to take them to the next level. And here I also chat with awesome experts on specific SaaS-related topics to bring more value to the SaaS community and hopefully share some very unique knowledge. And for this, here today with me is Jane Portman, co-founder and CEO of UserList, an email automation platform for SaaS companies. And we're talking about email marketing frameworks today. Welcome.
Hi, Anna. Hi, Anna. Thanks for the warm intro. Excited to be here today.
Sure. It's great to see you again. I mean, we did a podcast, I want to say last year, but maybe even before that, maybe 2023, which was great. I will link it in the comments. But yeah, happy to see you here and talk email campaigns, email automation. But let's start with your background.
Awesome. Yeah, I think we've learned a few things over the last few years. It's going to be like a nice update to the previous episode. At the moment, for the last 7 going on to 8 years, me and my co-founder Benedict have been building this software company called UserList, which is an email automation / marketing platform that serves exclusively SaaS companies. It's been a very exciting ride full of learnings. I think if we knew what we know today, we wouldn't dare to start, but I'm glad we did. Prior to that, I have another probably like 10 years as a UI UX consultant, serving other SaaS clients, helping them build web applications. And also from all those old days, have a few books under my belt, have a podcast called UI Breakfast, which is really old, before the times when everybody had their own podcast. And yeah, have a few kids, have 3 kids, enjoy diving, enjoy some weightlifting. That helps me stay fit away from the desk. That's probably the essence of me as a person.
Awesome. And probably helps a little bit with mental health. I mean, you need to load on weight to unload the workload. Okay, that's pretty cool. I wanna follow up on what you just said about, you know, if we knew what we're getting ourselves into, we might have chickened out, and I can totally feel that, I guess. But maybe you could talk about that a little bit. Like, what were the challenges, or what are still?
I think when we were starting the product, we were amazing craftsmen in terms of, like, Benedict was a great software engineer. I was definitely a skilled designer to make this happen. We also had a marketer on board back then who later decided to go. We parted ways with Claire. But the idea was, we actually knew very little about the field itself and the process and what it takes. And like my concept when the product idea was born was that, yeah, let's get people's data in, no problem, and then we'll help them do stuff with that. But that just how much trouble it actually is to get clean data in about user behavior, and how many adoption challenges and overall like customer success things we will face on this journey. That was, we never thought about it. We thought it's going to be an easy ride. To make it extra fun, our plan was to get to like $5,000 MRR in 6 months, take that as validation, then make the company happen, you know, and go on. It took us like 3 years to get to 5K or maybe more. It took us 2 years to go out of beta to begin with. And and a few more years it took us to play catch up in terms of features. And I think only last couple years we built automation workflows and we started to be really like feature par with competition. And man, it is a bloody red ocean. It's a bloody red ocean of like email tools out there, a very mature market. It takes people a lot to switch tools. I mean, it's just takes a lot for them to leave their current tool, do the migration. Of course, we learned like what exact moments that takes. We learned to help people, but man, Oof, it was quite a ride.
Learning. Yeah, I can totally see that. But you know, on the skilled designer part, every time I go to user list, I'm like, that's pretty. Like,
I'm glad that the strikes a chord with you.
Yes, no, it's very good. But yeah, obviously, you know, I want to talk to you about everything you did. Kind of, let's maybe not only focus on what we came here to focus on, but I want to, as a growth marketer, I also want to ask you about your growth strategy. And like you said, you've had it all. Like every time, again, I visit UserList website, there's like a ton of new stuff, and it's very exciting. And to be honest, I get quite a few ideas from what you guys are doing. So, you know, there is a podcast, you did some simple templates, you focus quite a bit on SEO. So how has this growth strategy been evolving? And what is the biggest focus now?
We have been neglecting SEO for the first, 3 or more years, which was a big mistake. I wish we had started sooner. But also those few years were spent learning about the subject matter. Like at the moment, we can confidently say we're experts in SaaS marketing. So at the moment, the current channel, top channel is SEO. That's how people find us. We have a very in-depth niche expert blog on the subject. And it's a combination of key guides. And we also have monthly collections of email examples going out as like our, you know, consistent stride when it comes to content. Fingers crossed with all this AI stuff happening that will keep working, because you know, and Perplexity is kind to us, you know, all these things. So content marketing, always learning. It's a mix of doing things with our customers and for our customers, and then taking the learnings back into content and making things scale there. So that's the strategy at the moment.
Okay, wonderful. And I know that you also started doing this consultation calls for every one of your new customers. And that's also something that you do personally. And I'm very curious about it. Like, first of all, time-wise, and like I'm very interested in looking at your calendar, but also just kind of, you know, first of all, what they are getting out of it, but also what are you guys getting out of it?
Sure. What you are describing is 60 minutes road mapping sessions, we call them, 60 minute calls that we do with every new customer. After doing done for you services for a few years by now, we've learned what part of that is, you know, can be scaled down to a smaller offering that we can do for everybody to make sure that we bridge that implementation gap when they're getting started. Because SaaS email marketing is more complex than any other industry because it's based on behavior data. And the challenge is to know what exact data you need, like what exactly you need to track about your users, and then make sure that's integrated through the API from your backend to the platform. And unless you're using a platform like Segment, but honestly, not everybody in the startup world uses it because there are also some back and forth, an extra layer. Unless you're doing that, which allows like for one-click installation, then this integration needs to be planned and executed. And also, there is certain angle to implementation. You have this whole life cycle of the user to orchestrate. And a lot of times, marketers who come in, they have a very good understanding of their audience. They know what they want to say. But that orchestration, you know, plan is also something they would love to get help with. So we're trying to get all of this encompassed into a 60-minute session to make sure that all the parties are aligned and that implementation is, you know, thought through. And the outcome of this session is a spreadsheet that they can take to their engineering team, and that the engineering team can make sure those data fields will start appearing in UserList. And the profiles start populating, and then you can take it from there. So data tracking plan, segmentation, and life cycle journey planning, like what campaigns they can be sending. We cover all of that briefly, and hopefully that gives them a good start. There probably is a spectrum of, you know, options to make this a paid option in future, or, you know, we also previously we had a quick start package, which we priced at $2,000, by the way, which of course included a bit of done for you work, but the big essence of that was that strategy and the planning I described. So we tried different ways. There's probably more experiments we can do in terms of like who we offer this to, how much we ask for, because there is always a balance. But at the moment, our consensus is to offer these calls to every new customer. I promise my calendar is probably not a dream calendar, but it's okay. As I said, we serve B2B SaaS, and there's just like not, we don't onboard hundreds of users per month. So it's kind of manageable.
Okay. All right. That makes sense.
I hope we run into this limitation and I can get right? another like doppelganger for me there. But so far, yeah, we're doing fine.
All right. Okay. That's perfect. So yeah, what is it in terms of like, you know, like you said, you're going into the eighth year and you are still the one doing the calls. And we always talk about this on the podcast, how, you know, at the early stages, especially the founder kind of should be there in those calls with customers. Yeah. So what do you learn from your customers, and how does it affect now the roadmap for UserList and yeah, just your strategy overall?
Sure. Not just these calls, also do sales demos and that part of the process. Thankfully, the technical part is delegated. We do have a dedicated customer success engineer helping like with the further steps if they run into problems. So I handle everything that's related to sales and to the actual strategy of teaching people how to use UserList. And of course, the biggest, brightest gift there is to see live teams of smart people struggling with certain things, you know, seeing patterns and knowing how exactly we can help them with certain frustrations, certain known roadblocks, and like seeing patterns and overcoming them gradually in content, or just knowing how to handle this live in a call. It's pretty fascinating. I think one of the reasons why we've been going for so long and are still kind of keen to run this business is a never-ending intellectual challenge of helping people get started and be successful, really. If it were, you know, a simple product, we'd probably get bored. You can never get bored here. It's always pretty exciting. And also different flavors of different SaaS companies and the way they market and the way they have needs. It's all pretty fascinating.
All right. I want to come back to what you just said, a customer success engineer. So for you guys, customer success is a tech role.
And it took us a while to learn that. Yes.
Okay. Tell me more.
Let's go back in time to 2021. Sure. We just raised a second round from like 20 plus angels. We have a little bit of cash to burn and looking for ways to levers to push in terms of product and success. My hypothesis was that we can hire a proactive customer success person who can work with existing users and help them get more out of their user list implementation. What we've learned through a series of not so successful hires and then consultations around that is that for our own buck, let's say, the best investment we can make is not to proactively bother people like let's do more, but more like in a responsive manner, being out there when they're doing their project, when they're doing their integration and setup, and just being very qualified there. So as a result, we scored a great customer success engineer, Michael, who was with us for a couple of years and just showed us the potential for this role. Also, it's a deeply technical product. So if you have someone not technical on the front line of support, like 75% would go to escalations, right into the CTO's like plate. And that is not how you want to spend CTO's time. So having an engineer to perform all those investigations, troubleshooting, because any problem, they're not trivial problems. They're like, oh, there is like a miracle happening with our data here. Like, please help. This is not what a front-end support person can usually handle. And also, it's interesting that in the early days, was me kind of supervising the customer success direction, because it was more about handling people, you know, strategy, voice and tone. But then now it's, you know, Benedict's domain. So Benedict works with the customer success engineer. And I'm like, I don't even know, like some questions I'm like just straight down, I'm going to ask them how to handle certain specific challenges. So that has changed over the years.
Okay, that's super interesting.
And my assumption was that customer success implies, you know, being great at on camera, talking to people, you know, charming them into using the product. We just learned that it's not it. I mean, of course, our team is charming, but it's not how we get things done. It's all about solid technical skills.
All right. Hiring a charming engineer is probably another thing that we should talk about, but
our engineers have been charming. No, don't take me wrong.
Okay. All right. That's perfect. Well, let's talk about, you know, what we came here to talk about, and this is the framework that you've been working on, and it's called, gotta love the name, I mean, Atomic Emails Framework. So maybe tell me more in a nutshell first, like what it is and how did you get to this in the first place?
The framework, basically it's an extensive do-it-yourself guide on the content part. So implementation has two big stages. One is the technical aspect, integration, segmentation. And for that, we use those road mapping sessions. And then our customers are left to their own devices for the creative part to develop the email content and set up the campaigns. So for that, we do have this huge guide called Atomic Emails, which is a method for copywriting and putting together your campaigns based on the resources you already have as a software company. That's the biggest deal here, because of course there are numerous templates and ideas out there floating. We also have a library of templates, but every business is super special. There are different things you can be offering to your users. Maybe you're running a SaaS that's pretty high touch and you need to offer like calls to people at all times and you pedal like high touch support. Maybe you're great at content. Maybe you have a fabulous video library. Maybe you have fabulous articles. Every business is special. So the essence of the method is auditing your resources and stronger sides and then using that to storyboard your content for emails. That's the essence of it. And the way it was, you know, birthed sort of was through multiple done-for-you projects that we did for different SaaS companies. And in the way we approached this content creation, certain patterns started to emerge. What we were doing, we were giving them a huge questionnaire, trying to audit things about their business and the existing resources. And then our team would just sort of go through these resources and map out the email planning for based on it. And it just was so clear that this pattern kept happening again and again in the projects that we decided to make this a thing for everybody, because it's really not rocket science. Like, it's just work. So we put this together into a big guide. I wanted to make it, you know, like pirate metrics or stuff like that, when you have a nice acronym to framework. So I spent like 40 minutes trying to come up with an acronym and I couldn't. And I kept stumbling at that stage when you atomize, like break down those resources into atomic small emails. So I thought, well, maybe atomic is the keyword here. And that's how the name was born. James Clear, sorry, Atomic Habits. I know this thing existed before, but I guess it's not patented. So here we go, atomic emails.
Yeah, but I think it also, like, you think about the reference and you kind of immediately understand what this should be about. So it's kind of a good thing. I think it plays out really well for you. But okay, that's pretty cool.
If I can add one thing.
Yeah,
sure. It really, really reflects one of our key ideas in this method, is that your emails should be simple and actionable. So one idea per email, like keeping them atomic as in simplistic, and like one thing per message. We often see a mistake when marketers try to fit too many things into one email, and as a result, nothing gets done. And an email is a pretty simple thing. Like, it has a headline, preview, and like one call to action. If you stick to this, you're going to get better results, because everybody has their attention limited to like 2 seconds.
All right. Awesome. So I want to break down, you know, kind of the process of generating these ideas for emails. Like, do I go and look on my website, like what's performing best, to say, I don't know, the blog post that's really popular and I want to repurpose it into an email, tie it down to a certain topic, a certain CTA, certain offer that we have? Like, how does it work? How to break down and story block, like you said, that those resources that you have into generating atomic emails?
Mm-hmm. So the storyboard format, we were not the ones inventing it. We actually learned about it from other email marketing consultants. It's a spreadsheet where you have the email title, and instead of having the full email body, you have like 2-sentence paragraph synopsis that replaces the full copy and just gives you an idea what the email is about. So that's what we're working with. A huge list, a spreadsheet with sort of email ideas that first you source them and then you shuffle them around. As a business marketer, business owner, you probably already know what you have there, what people need to interact with, what they need to learn to become successful during their onboarding phase and beyond. As I said again, it's not just the content, it's also the things that you need to offer, maybe some sort of manual engagements, calls, anything that at scale you can be suggesting in emails. Maybe it's some essential knowledge in form of a blog post. Maybe they must see this specific video or like 2 videos. Maybe there are some other ideas. Maybe there is one setup step that people stumble across like every time. So you need to triple check that people are done with it and keep offering help on that. Can take different forms. And that's why it's about your business and about what you have to offer and what you can say. While you're doing that, you should keep in mind that it's one idea per email. So don't try and fit everything like in one message. Basically, a lot of small ideas, and then reordering them to make sure it makes sense. And not just focusing on, and also solves the problem that's also pretty common, is making emails instructional is a poor strategy. So just having 10 instructional emails as your onboarding flow, like, hey, you need to create your first project. Hey, you need to do this. This is like a natural reflex of what you would put there. This is not what makes people successful. It's actually a pretty bad idea. It's more like inspire versus instruct. Usually people don't have an issue figuring out the next step, but they do have an issue with finding time, motivation, mm-hmm. and just generally remembering about this project. So it's a pretty delicate balance of different types of content that you should have there.
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
Okay. Do you maybe have an example of like a good email? Maybe not like, of course, like I don't expect you to recite it, but kind of just maybe a structure of what it looks like, the, you know, the links, the, again, the CTA. Like
in the, if you navigate to our, if you go to our blog and find the actual guide for atomic emails, there are like three case studies with actual storyboards composed for those projects. I can give you an example. One of the interesting projects we did was for SuggestionOx, which is a enterprise level tool that you adopt in a big company. It's an anonymous suggestion box. So it's technically super easy to install. So there is no need to provide step-by-step instructions for people to get started with SuggestionOx. It's very easy. You just like plug in your logo, your colors, you're done. You grab the URL. That's easy. But the hard part was to make sure it's rolled out in a big company. And that's why within this project, we worked with the company to develop step-by-step instructions on how to roll out this tool. So as part of the email series, we had like step one, step three, step four recommendations on what exactly the user can do to overcome these obstacles, like test it with a small HR department, test it with like one team, and then roll it out to the entire company. The biggest problem being once you roll them out to the company, it's kind of hard to take back. Like, hey, we gave you an anonymous suggestion box, but sorry, we're taking it away. Like basically that. And then we gave them methods about like venting frustrations about the anonymity, because anonymity is a big one when you're making like an enterprise suggestion. I'm probably making it oversimplified now for the examples. You can head over to the post. There is an actual storyboard with the email content that we put together for them and a couple of emails.
Okay, I see. Yeah, thank you. So one more thing that I wanted to ask you, because again, everyone talks about it, right? Everyone hates kind of generic emails and wants everything to be personalized. So is there a way to personalize within the framework?
Personalization is vague beast. Like it's a very like multifaceted story. Of course, you can input like first name, company name, whatever. You can probably even ask AI to like write a snippet about something. It was just from the top of my head. But our philosophy is personalization is about just functionally matching the user journey where they are and making sure the email is appropriate to what they need at the current moment. So basically making sure only relevant emails appear in their inboxes. That's usually done by just checking on, like, if you want to send an email about a certain feature, first you make a condition check. Are they using this feature? How much? And if not, you can send them that email. And if they are, you just move forward to the next one. So we are weaving this journey and continuously checking whether, like, the person needs this email or we can move forward. That's one thing. And then the most powerful personalization happens when you have different roles, different use cases, different industries. It really depends on the business. And maybe not every business needs that. But sometimes you find yourself that thinking that content needs to be vastly different for certain, like the admin of the company needs to have like steps A, B, C, and the average editor needs to know completely different things. That's when maybe it's time to think about different, entirely different onboarding workflows for these roles. Or that's like, there are several layers you can do there. You can have separate campaigns slash workflows, then, or you can have one general campaign, but at a certain stage, you can branch off based on like the industry or the role or something within a campaign, or you can even customize fragments of a certain email, like offer a paragraph for people. Like Liquid, the templating language, offers pretty interesting conditions you can use inside one email, like a paragraph for photographers, a paragraph for artists, and things like that inside the body. So there are many ways, many levels you can think about this, but don't overthink it. Like, unless you can find big difference in this content, I would say the ROI does not make sense. Like, it doesn't make sense to just do personalization for the sake of it. So first make sure it just makes common sense to do this.
Yeah. Okay. I feel like, you know, when we talk marketing, a lot of the time it's, you know, use your common sense. Like, this is fair. This is just work, like you said before. But I think a lot of people, a lot of marketers, a lot of founders need to be reminded of that, because like, you develop this tunnel vision and, you know, common sense is not there anymore because you focus
on. I'm definitely not blaming them for anything like that, because when we work with hundreds of companies, we can see like where it's an overkill and where it's an essential. But when it's your own only business and you've been marketing it for the last 5 years, surely you may think that, oh my God, these emails are going to make real difference. Like, the order of emails is going to matter and, you know, impact the conversion rate, increase it by 40%. I'm sorry, but it probably won't. So it's more like a very low hanging fruit must do thing versus than a silver bullet that would fix your leaky funnel or something like that.
Okay. So what a, go on.
So emails is one area where this happens. And another one is the data tracking. So this is when a truly dedicated marketer can stop seeing the forest behind the trees, because they just focus on those dozens of different events and properties they want to track. And you only need as much as you're going to use, like now or maybe in the foreseeable future. Like a few key features monitored, a few key events, that's all. You don't need to track their life behind the scenes, you know. And it's not extremely common, but sometimes I've seen, you know, overly enthusiastic marketers develop like a 3-page tracking plan. We're like, really, it's going to be so much work and also hard to manage down the road. So when we do these sessions, we try to balance and make sure it's common sense.
Okay. Yeah, no, I could totally see that. So what, since, you know, still we started talking about measuring and data, how do you personally at UserList measure success of your email campaigns?
I thought you were going to say measuring success of the users. This is a different story. Now, for example,
sorry, pivoting a little.
Sure. When we talk about like measuring success of users, we would say we're looking at definitely like the number of users in the database, the number of segments they have set up, how many active campaigns they have. These are probably key, like drafted campaigns versus active campaigns, number of broadcasts sent. So key activities. If you're doing another product, that would be different metrics for you. So that's that. The effectiveness of the campaigns. There are two things you can do. First, on every email, these are classic email marketing metrics. You can see number of emails sent, delivered, opened, clicked. These days, I'm not looking at opens as much, more like clicks, just to see the engagement, because opens are really skewed with modern email marketing software. So there are metrics available on that front. And then there is the new instrument we introduced called Conversion Goals. It's a node you can place anywhere in your workflows, and then you can assign a conversion window and identify what conversion means. And then you can see people passing through this node, how many of them convert. So that can be used in many different ways. If you set a short conversion window and attach it to like one email, you can get an idea if you have a really strong call to action email, like how is that email performing? Or you can put this node in the beginning of an A/B testing branch. So let's say you have three branches or three different, like could be role split or something you want to test basically. And then you have an idea for conversions for each of them. Or you can even place a big one node in the beginning of the campaign and have a general understanding, like how my trials are converting. So all of these things are available. It's pretty awesome. I would say we don't have a huge scale of huge number of users floating through our automations. So the biggest thing we're trying to keep up with is to make sure the automations match our current philosophy about onboarding and like what we think is best. So basically keeping the workflows just generally up to date is the bigger task than trying to over optimize for like Lyft or something. Because as we learn things, I don't know, every half a year or so we have something new, hypothesis. For example, there was a stage maybe last year when we had a pretty radical email in the beginning, something like, don't do it yourself, hire a consultant, you're going to be screwed. Pretty brutal email, to be honest. So we we didn't measure, but that was like our philosophy at the time, look, of what we need to say to new users. I think we've softened now, like, and focused on offering those role mapping sessions since. But yeah, these are like the things we focus on as a team, is to make sure it reflects the reality and what we want to say now.
Okay. All right. That's pretty great. All right. So, you know, just for the sake of it, and it's okay if maybe you don't have some raw data to answer this question, but since everyone enjoys, you know, kind of comparison and the numbers, do you have actually any stats on like your own performance or your customers' performance with email marketing after they've been introduced to Atomic Emails framework?
Oh, we definitely don't have like before and after for the framework. I wish we did more in this department, but no, it's usually more about just making sure that things are in place, and that already makes people pretty happy. So the big takeaway here is don't worry about optimizing stuff before you have anything in place. So just going to that first stage is pretty cool already. However, I'm happy to share my findings from a little bit of industry research that I did last year. We talked to folks who work in high volume businesses or do consulting for high volume businesses. And it's the data is like anecdotal, but roughly speaking, you can expect a 20% lift due to introduction of email versus no email. The way to test that would be to have two test branches, one completely blank, so no email sent, versus onboarding email flow in place. And one company I talked to learned about this because they accidentally turned off their onboarding emails for a month, and that's what they learned. Some others like ran intentional tests. Largely speaking, the difference is like 20% lift. So if you're converting free accounts into paid at a range of 5%, with this, you can do this at the range of 6%. So not from 5 to 25, not 10x, not anything, but something like this. To make this test statistically significant, and that's where we hit the wall, you need to take like 7,000 or 4,000 people through the test to confirm a 20% lift. So when you run tests, you have like this necessary test size formula, and you need to run like thousands of people through this node, through this test of no email versus email, to confirm that you've raised your 5% to 6%. We work with B2B SaaS, and for a handful of exceptions of high volume freemium businesses, the rest of folks get like, I don't know, 50, 100, 200 per month. So such test is just unthinkable for them. Therefore, any real lift that we're talking about can hardly ever be measured in such businesses. So if we want to find, like we had some ideas whenever we went through, if we really want to make a numbered case study, we need to find a very, very high volume business, usually comes with a freemium model. And those businesses, yeah, it's a special story. They usually, that's when costs also come into play, because maintaining an email database of like millions of people is not a cheap idea. And they have their own problems. And also pruning is an interesting one where we really need to think where it makes sense to nurture the users with behavior-based stuff versus dumping them into cheap software to send them just basic stuff. So yeah, it's pretty fascinating. It depends on the scale of the business.
Okay. Well, in case you
did that answer some of your, did this satisfy your curiosity
yes.
on that front?
But now I'm curious, like, if you ever actually run through this, if we should do this again, because I would be curious to learn how it affects. I mean, obviously, you know, it also, I think it depends so much on like how you do it and the timing and like a billion more points, but yeah. Still.
Yeah, the reason why, one of the reasons why I was curious to learn about this, we were launching conversion goals last year, and someone recommended Alex Hormozi's book about crafting an irresistible offer. When your deal is so good, basically tied to a specific monetary ROI, like we could do a done for you project and say we are going to give you like an X percent lift. And only then you pay, and other types of things you could do if you could promise an ROI. But then, unfortunately, we stumbled into this real world, like limitation on sample size and such. And right now, the way I'm thinking about it is when you buy a new mattress, you need a mattress, needs to be good. You buy one every 10 years. You probably, once you buy it, you rarely take it back until, well, I know the Casper success story when they revolutionized, you know, returns and mattresses. But overall, it's like something you really need to have, but the ROI is kind of fuzzy. It's just like basic hygiene for SaaS, and that's what we're selling. And I think there's some code to crack how to sell it better. And better over the years.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll get to it. I hope next, maybe in the next episode. But let's do maybe like a quick recap. And also, if you can share a hack that also works for your email campaigns, like how to craft something really, well, not, let's not say spectacular, maybe, but something that really works. And, or maybe, you know, worked once, but you wish worked again, because it was just so good.
Oh, I wish I had something like that. Just work to make your emails short, human, and simple. Please. Like, we have enough of, like, vague talk in our inboxes. Just make them human, make them short. And also, since, like I said, the ROI is fuzzy, blurry, and such, maybe make sure you enjoy yourself writing them, add a dose of humor, add some jokes in place. I don't know if it makes sense. Our own onboarding emails, you know how the Friends series, they have names, like the one with the dog, the one with with something. Our lead nurture sequence has email titles, like the one with the this, the one with the that. It makes no common sense. But this is just fun for me to see the email titles. And I'm hoping that some readers, when they get the one with the X in their inbox, they're like, oh, that's from UserList. Makes no practical sense. But at least, I mean, that's something I can smile about and tell you, for example.
Yeah.
And I think also in our sign up flow, we have Rachel Green as the like dummy date.
All right. All the fans of Friends, UserList is your tool. But, you know, just to kind of back this up and kind of like to the point of be concise, be short and have fun with it. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of this particular example, but I still think it's a great example. You know, Nathan Latka, he sends these emails that you know, when I was first getting them, I was not used to this style. It was something like, we're starting. Are you coming? Like in the subject. And I was like, I would jump. I would be like, okay, am I late or something? Did I forget? Why is it not in my calendar? It kind of worked because it made me open it, made me go through this. Like, okay, a bit more on the pushy side for my liking now, because I know it's Nathan and, you know, they keep coming and I keep kind of smiling at them. Because also I cannot usually participate in the live sessions because they're in the US and the timing is not right for me. But hey, they look pretty fun. And I bet they work. I bet I'm not the only one jumping at this.
I can talk about subject lines because yeah. My main email address, my name at useless.com. And I'm not the only email, like every software in the world can guess that, basically makes me a target for all the cold outreach in the world for like contractor, so we're saying any kind of agency. And I just, it's full on. I can see a daily roll up of popular hacks that people are trying. It's insane. Like, trust me, it does not, like, even if I open it, it does not make me happy because like takes me about half a second to realize that they tricked me and I get mad then. Cold outreach is a separate story. Please don't use Useless for cold outreach. Use separate software or don't do it all together because this is getting out of whack really these days. So you cannot trick people into this. Just be yourself, provide value, and all this old jazz, you know, that we're used to. There's probably another reason why you're still reading it is because you actually respect Nathan, even though I do as much. But I mean, he's a reputable figure. There's also a name on on this email, and that name is not even content, but it's actually like half of the credibility, isn't it?
Also, I can totally get this.
In my old consulting days, a lot of my business was based on my newsletter. It was my bread and butter. So I ran like 7,000 people newsletter about design. I was posting podcast episodes to that. I was selling books through that. I had so much fun with email marketing there. I loved sending personal updates. I loved sitting on my new birthday, sending out a newsletter that like, hey, I'm turning 30 today. I wrote a post. And it was just so much fun. I had, you know, 10, 20, 30 responses to emails like this. Also, I could send out an email and say, hey, we have 30% off the books because it's Halloween. And I would go get 20 sales from it. It was so live and dynamic. Now that I run a SaaS newsletter, I mean, it's, we're publishing better content, but it's just coming from the company. And unfortunately, it's not the same interaction that it is when you're running a personal newsletter. Probably I could go back on track, you know, as a physical person, build again, you know, charismatic personal list about email marketing. I'm just not feeling like that at the moment go and do this again from scratch. But yeah, just remember that it's always different between like your personal newsletter, the business newsletter, and what you can do about it. But we do have enough blunt email.
Yeah.
If you feel like adventurous, I feel like you can't get punished for emails. So have fun with them, please.
Yeah. To that point, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, yes, we are building companies and we're building brands behind them. But for example, like I get, oh my God, I will not remember her last name, Amanda from SparkToro.
Natividad, I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
Yes, that, right. great emails, right? And I think it's a great blend of like personal brand, but also company brand. Yep, okay, all the new companies, all the new SaaS companies out there, should they have like an ambassador for the brand that would be the voice of the company?
If you can make it work.
Helpful.
Anything, all is good under the sun in the war. Like all is good if it works, if you're enjoying yourself and if you can. Probably it will be better like bet if that's one of the founders who already has industry credibility and is, but yeah, for example, we also have like a dedicated team member who signs the newsletters, for example. Amanda's obviously a bright example of how, I think I'm also reading her personal newsletter, so I'm not sure which one of them resonates with me more. I clearly remember one where she was like describing her new baby experience and stuff.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure it was not SparkToro.
No, I don't think so. That was the personal one.
Yeah. So yeah, it takes a, honestly, what's happening these days on social media and like everything is so dumbed down to 15 second reels. I'm not sure I like it. So yeah,
all right.
We're zooming into like the general state of marketing today, right?
Let's rant a little bit.
Pretty pathetic, pretty pathetic.
We have some time to rant about about this. But yeah, all right. Well, thank you so much for, you know, for walking me through the framework and the story of what UserList is up to these days. Super cool. Yeah, anything, maybe, you know, how to find you, how to find UserList, if anyone wants to try, anyone wants to chat to you about the framework, what's the best way?
Sure, head over to useless.com, go read our awesome guides in the blog, that like you're gonna love it. We have a wonderful blog, and then I hope to see you at the demo eventually, and basically reach out to me on socials. I'm UI Breakfast on Twitter. You can find me and UserList on any of these platforms, LinkedIn, Twitter, Blue Sky also. Yeah, Blue Sky. We started the Blue Sky.
You're trying Blue Sky. Okay.
Yeah. Are you?
How is
Are
that
you?
Working for you?
I'm not so sure. Yeah. It's just like all the old friends are there. So that's how it's working for me. But
yeah,
I'm not sure about the business side.
It was a big promise, I think, as in, you know, Twitter, when it was cool. But I think it's just people are a bit overloaded with social media and different like reposts and all that stuff. So it feels a bit like too much effort for everybody. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just my feeling.
I feel like there's a lot of juice happening these days in closed communities. Like, but also they're very unlikely to keep up if you're doing crap there. So it's very, very like value first, honest, quiet, you know, kind of marketing that you need to do there.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah. Thank you so much again for your time. It's been a blast and happy to do it again sometime.
Thank you, Anna. Enjoy it very much.
Cool. All right. See you next time. Take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.